This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Heart for Lebanon, the Christian ministry working among 2 million Syrian refugee families who've been displaced. For just $29 a month, you can help Heart for Lebanon reach out in Jesus' name to a family of six, providing them with food, Christian education, survival essentials, and the gospel. Please call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
For the first time in Gallup poll history, Democrats have a more positive image of socialism than they do of capitalism, with 57% having a positive view and a lower view than ever of capitalism. This, as tech giants censor and shut down conservative and Christian voices, radical gay activists destroy the livelihoods of Christian business owners, and violent members of Antifa assault police and media in public places. Something has gone horribly wrong in the United States and in fact, the West, where a society birthed on the foundation of the Bible, and yet we live in a nation now that has within it forces working hard for the last several decades to destroy that foundation. And what's worse is when the church colludes with those forces to accelerate the decline and destruction. How should Christians respond to this cancer of cultural Marxism? How do we respond to the rapidly changing Western worldview and proclaim Jesus as Lord? We're going to tackle this topic today with the Reverend Melvin Tinker. Melvin is a popular speaker and author and senior minister at the Anglican Vicarage St. John's Newland in Hull, England. And today we'll be discussing his latest book, That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost. And Melvin, just wonderful to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Janet. And it's lovely to hear you as well.
Well, thank you. That Hideous Strength, every Christian worth his salt will hear that and say, wait, that's C.S. Lewis. What is the comparison there between That Hideous Strength of Lewis and the title of your book?
Okay, well, Lewis wrote his book, That Hideous Strength, back in 1945. It was on the back of a lecture he gave at Durham University, eventually entitled The Abolition of Man. And there he was arguing that there was a sort of force at work in, certainly in Western society and in British society at the time, whereby science was being extolled almost to the point of a religion, and that An intellectual elite could actually manipulate and change people's views of things through technology, through education. And the idea in the book is that there's this little sort of group, this sort of modernistic, sort of scientistic group, that wishes to basically dismantle nature and basically liberate, what they call about liberate man, from nature. And he saw this as a very sort of insidious thing. And so he wrote the novel. And that was the sort of his ism of his day, if you like. It was called naturalism. Things have changed since then. And a new Hideous Strength, in my view, has come about pretty well at the same time, actually, starting in the 1930s in Germany. In Frankfurt,
yes.
Which is called neo-Marxism or cultural Marxism or libertarian Marxism. And that's the dominant ism in the West today. It's certainly pretty well swept the board in Europe, and it's certainly making great headway in the United States. In some ways, I'm surprised because you've got a stronger, I think, sort of Christian base than we do now.
Yes, although it seems to be eroding daily.
It certainly is. Yeah.
I say that ironically, but it is. It's very distressing to see this. Now, you had mentioned the Frankfurt School, and I'm sure for many listeners, they're not familiar with names like Marcuse or Gramsci or some of these names that people associate with the Frankfurt School. But take us back in history a little bit, if you would, Melvin, and explain how it was that cultural Marxism was first conceived.
Okay, well, it actually began with just a week-long sort of get-together in 1923, organized by a guy called Felix Weil, who was a Marxist. And the vision was to set up a Marxist think tank research center. And originally the name was the Institute for Marxism. Well, that gave the game away. And so they decided to use a more sort of subtle and more attractive title, the Institute for Social Research. And it really got underway in 1930. And they developed something called critical theory. And the idea there was to subject, if you like, traditional society and traditional thoughts to unremitting destructive criticism. Basically arguing that all thought and all ideas are locked into a particular period in history. And of course they omitted to recognize that critical theory itself was of course locked into its own theory. But anyway, so they brought together three things: Marxism and the idea of a struggle between groups, I mean the traditional one being between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat.
Right.
Sort of an economic struggle, Darwinism, and also Freudianism. And what happened, the interesting thing with bringing in Freud there was that they're saying, well, look, according to Freud, bourgeois society, Western society, is inherently sexually repressed. Mm. And even the bourgeois need liberating. Mm. And the way you do that is sexual liberation. Where have you heard that? And so all these things were sort of brought together to lead to this very sort of, I think, potent mix, whereby instead of having, as it were, under traditional Marxism, where you have a sort of head-on violent revolution, you know, it's happened in 1917, for instance, in Russia, and in various countries around the world, this is much more subtle. They talk about the long march through the institutions, which actually is a term actually taken from Mao Zedong. And the idea there is instead of having this head-on violent political battle, it's much more subtle. You get people to change their ways of thinking, what they consider to be normal, mainly through education, through the media, and through marketing. Mm. And it's been very successful, and particularly we can see it in talk about sexual liberation on the gay issue.
Yes, absolutely. So this was not just something that came up out of nowhere. This was conceived and pushed upon us. Now, how was it that this march through the institutions became so successful, would you say?
Well, it's interesting. Many of these fellows from Reich and Marcuse actually fled from Germany and made their home in the United States. You welcomed them in.
Sorry. we didn't want them anymore.
and they you know, they took advantage of that, of your kindness and the education and the freedoms they were given. And I think in many ways, I mean, some would say what the way things really got going, mainly in the 1960s, and people, you know, who've bought into this theory, and particularly the sexual liberation, of course, hormones are a very powerful factor. In the 1960s, partly to avoid the draft, what happens? Well, you enroll on PhD programs.
Right, that's
and
true.
I think more PhDs were awarded between 1860 and 1970, of all the PhDs awarded, they were awarded in the 1960s. Hmm. So, of course, getting into academia then meant you avoided the draft. Others avoided the draft by becoming liberal Protestant ministers or even Roman Catholic revolutionary ministers.
True.
Now, of course, by the 80s, the late 70s, 80s, these guys are now occupying positions of great influence in the academy, in terms of making appointments and so on, and of course, supremely through the media, not only Hollywood, but also but the making of TV programs, the reporting of news. To give you an example, that's America, but over here in Britain, every day when I switch on the BBC website, there are at least three articles, mainline articles, about homosexuality or the transgender.
Yes.
As if they're the most important things going on in the world.
Yep.
Why? Because there's a liberal elite that occupies the media. That's
right.
A fact.
Right. Right. Oh, I know. It's just a steady stream of propaganda. That's all it is.
Pure propaganda. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's unrelenting.
It is unrelenting, and it's just, it's full force all the time. And unfortunately, when you do that to sometimes an underthinking population, you can change it. And we've seen what's happened with that. We're going to come back. Reverend Melvin Tinker with us. That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $249 for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
To me, the ultrasound was the best part because up until that point, I did not think about anything but myself. I did not think about the blessing that I was given or what was inside of me.
The Ministry of Preborn meets young moms where they are and introduces them to their preborn babies. Because when a mom in crisis sees her baby on ultrasound and hears his heartbeat, 8 out of 10 times, she will see her baby as a living person, not an inconvenience.
And that ultrasound changed everything for me. It really did. That made it all worthwhile to know that I was going to have a little blessing.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. Would you join with Preborn and Janet Meffer today? For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds and help save 5 babies' lives. All gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your donation goes towards saving babies' lives. Call 855-402-BABY now. 855-402-2229. That's 855-402-BABY. Or there's a banner to click at janetmeffer.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer today. Reverend Melvin Tinker is with us. We're talking about the cancer of cultural Marxism in the church, the world, and the gospel of change. His book is called That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost. You are absolutely right, Melvin, when you were talking about the BBC constantly pushing LGBT stories, always pro. And I was doing a workshop on this subject last summer when I spoke at a conference for Restored Hope Network, and I was doing a conference on a workshop on the media and how the media has changed the way that it covers gay issues, for example. And I was finding stories from the early 90s in outlets like the Washington Post and the New York Times. And back then, they actually made the effort to tell both sides, where they would go to a Christian and say, well, what do you think of this? And they would go to the liberal, non-Christian, what do you think of this? And by the time we got to about the year 2000, they don't even bother to interview anybody who opposes so-called gay marriage or anything else. It's all pro, and it's basically now, as somebody said recently, all the stories now on the LGBT issue is you quote the gay Republican and then you quote the gay Democrat, and that's supposed to be balanced coverage. But isn't that part and parcel of cultural Marxism? You control the narrative.
You control the narrative. That's right. And you see what has happened, and what I argue in my book, is that there's been an erosion, a gradual erosion, dismantling of what was predominantly a Christian worldview in the West. It didn't mean everyone's a Christian, but basically certain things were assumed, that there is an objective reality, that there is purpose in life, there is meaning, there's a goal, and there are values and moral categories and so on. And that is the thing that's been gradually dismantled. So when that happens, and then people's mind assumptions have been changed, then really what I say in the book, it's like the flat earthist. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are some flat earthers around. I believe the world is round. I don't believe it is flat. But there are those people who are flat earthers. Now, very few people today will think of, wreck their brain, think, how can I argue against a flat earthers? And if we're going to argue with flat earthers, we must have a flat earthers into the studio. We must get someone who argues, a Copernican position and weigh them up. No, we just simply assume the flat earthers is out of date, out of touch, and wrong.
Yes.
That is the way people now see in Christianity. It's not that there's anything to argue. It's not that they want to consider our arguments. They think there's nothing to argue about.
Right. That's true. And it's just immediately dismissed, even though they're the ones who are ignorant of the arguments of Christianity.
Yes. But that's the other thing with cultural Marxism, because this is another oddity, because there is this situation where cultural Marxism is also wedded to postmodernism, and there are complications there, but basically with postmodernism there's no such thing as truth, there's no such thing as, in fact, as logic and reasoning, because all that is seen as simply power tools used by the oppressive white majority or whatever it may be, and in which case you don't want to use arguments. The last thing you want to do is use reason.
Right.
What you want to do is appeal as much as you can to people's emotions. You come in at the level of the emotions. In which case, and when you look at the sort of various programs on TV, it's how people feel. And hey, you're hurting me. It's my feelings you're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Not, well, this is the right position or this is the wrong position. How dare you do that? How dare you say that? Because you hurt me. Therefore, you're the oppressor and the victim. You shouldn't do that.
Yes.
And therefore, all argument is closed down.
Yes, or the line that sometimes pops up around here is, I'm sorry, but you're making me feel unsafe.
That's the other thing. So we have safe zones. Now, when that happens, in one sense, we do need safe zones,
Yeah.
But when it comes to being able to engage and when we're basically talking about freedom of thought and freedom of expression, and that means we must be able to debate civilly, but we must be able to debate. And to talk about when people erect safe zones, it means basically I don't want to hear anything that will upset my position and make me feel unsafe. Not that being made to, they're not unsafe, no one's attacking, but was simply wanting to say, look, here's my position, let me hear your position, let's talk about it.
Yes.
So it just closes everything down. But that's the death of civilization. If we cannot speak, eventually we're not going to be able to think.
Well, that's where we are. So you have a large number of people within the population in the West who I would say are not exactly critical thinkers. They will accept what the media tells them. They will imbibe it through all sorts of channels, whether it's movies, TV shows. I think, for example, of this book that came out in the late 80s, After the Ball, and it was written by these homosexual activists who said how we're going to get accepted. And one of the main things was, let's get some really nice homosexual characters into TV shows. Well, that's exactly what they did. That's where they started, and they started to break down people's moral objections to homosexuality. And it's breathtaking how quickly they have been able to just absolutely revolutionize the culture on that issue. But again, is that because the populace had already been made to not want to think through the auspices of the cultural Marxists? They had already broken us down to some extent.
Yes, sure. There certainly had been a breaking down. But since then, things have moved on. So you start off with this, hey, there's not much different. These are nice, you bring on the best representatives of the gay position and so on, and they don't seem any different to us. In fact, they seem nicer in some cases and so on. And then after that, then you bring in all the weird, nasty stuff,
right,
which we're now seeing over in this country with some of the gay pride marches, where people are wearing the most obnoxious, in fact, not wearing, this is the problem.
Yeah, obscene.
Some of the things, leather bondage and all this dreadful, wicked stuff going on. But that comes in later. But there's another factor now, I think. It's not simply that we've been worn down and our resistance has been lowered, but there's also the element of fear. If someone dares to raise their head above the parapet and say, actually, I think this is wrong, then what happens? well, then you're classed as a homophobe or Islamophobe or whatever it may be, and you then get a torrent of abuse. Emails come in, you're on the front page, you're pilloried, your family's made to feel unsafe, talk about safe. And then you think, whoa. And of course, to make sure other people see what happens to those who do speak out.
Yes.
And so you've got this dreadful totalitarianism, I guess. It's almost similar to the classic Marxism, whereby, someone who's sort of against the party is made a public example of.
True.
And they have to be reprogrammed and retrained.
Right.
That's happening now with tremendous power because of the social media. Twitter, frenzies that occur, through all the social media. And when you're subject to that, with people writing in or criticizing you from all over the world now, man, that's a great pressure for anyone to take.
Well, it is.
From experience.
No, me too. I know.
Sure.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Been there. I know what that feels like. I know what it's like to be pilloried and lied about and, have people threaten you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting you mentioned social media because there were a number of us just recently talking about, we lost a number of followers on social media. All the conservatives and Christians were comparing notes. Oh, me too. And then this person gets booted. And this person, I had somebody else tell me, I was booted off Facebook for writing something about homosexuality.
Yeah.
It's becoming so common, and it just shows you who rules over you when you know who you're not allowed to criticize.
Yeah. So this is where we've got a totalitarianism in the West. And it is so invidious. It is so powerful. And what is scary is that many Christians aren't even aware of it.
Yes.
They know something is wrong and feel uncomfortable and feel disorientated. But why? And my little book, and it is hopefully readable, tries to address this and say to the church, this is what is happening, this is why it's happening, and the church needs to wake up and respond to this.
Amen. Melvin, do you think that the church has dropped the ball along the way? Certainly cultural Marxism is not the fault necessarily of the church, but have we failed to mount an adequate defense against this as it was going on? Have we been asleep at the wheel?
Well, different churches have done different things. I mean, some have simply just gone along with it because the cultural Marxism has infiltrated the church.
Yes.
One just has to look at the Episcopal Church in the United States to see that, and increasingly my own denomination, the Church of England. But in other cases, I'm thinking of, say, more of the sort of conservative evangelicals. I think, to be frank, some have just engaged in sort of cultural withdrawal. Hmm. As long as one can keep worshiping, keep the mega church going, or whatever church we may have, and we're left alone, then fine, I want to keep my head down and just get on with the ministry. But we do that, we surrendered. And I think, to be honest, we've also dishonored Christ because we are meant to contend for the faith where we have been placed and where the issues are. And that's to do, it's all basic Christian faithfulness, really. So I think we have failed, it's I don't think it's too late, but it's going to require a lot more effort now and a lot more courage.
Oh yes,
because I think we are in persecution. I don't want to get into a sort of persecution mentality or victim mentality, but we're in persecution territory now.
We are,
Before it gets any worse, before more Christians will be thrown into jail for this, the church has got to, the leadership in the evangelical churches has just got to wake up.
Oh, that's so true. We're going to come back. Reverend Melvin Tinker's book, That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost. You're listening to Janet Mefford today. Stay with us. We'll be back. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Heart for Lebanon, the Christian ministry working among 2 million Syrian refugee families who've been displaced. For just $29 a month, you can help Heart for Lebanon reach out in Jesus' name to a family of six, providing them with food, Christian education, survival essentials, and the gospel. Please call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499 or janetmefford.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. So glad to have with us the Reverend Melvin Tinker. He's a popular speaker and author and senior minister at the Church of England Church, St. John's Newland in Hull, England. And his book is called That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost, The Cancer of Cultural Marxism in the Church, the World, and the Gospel of Change. Now, I noted that you said, Melvin, in your book that when we're talking about, for example, the sex revisionist agenda is how I think you phrased it, moving into the church, you said two of the church institutions that are primary targets are the Church of England and the Roman Catholic Church. Can you speak to what you're going through in Great Britain regarding the sex revisionist agenda and how bad it's gotten for you over there?
Oh, boy. It is like a juggernaut, what's happening over here. Let me just give you something which came up 2 days ago. This is going through the Scottish Parliament. Now, Scotland has, although it's part of the United Kingdom, it does have its own Parliament. And now the Scottish Parliament, the government are proposing, and it's very serious, that the teachers in schools can give the five-year-olds, children as young as five, the option to choose their own sexual identity.
Yes, I heard that.
Okay.
Crazy.
So a five-year-old, I mean, you know, they're insecure as it is.
Right.
How this, to me, I'll be blunt about it, this is child abuse. That's what's going on.
It is.
That they want to make that legal. That's what's happening. Also in our schools, there's been recently in various, what do you call them, elementary schools or kindergarten.
Right.
In various schools around the country, where there's been called drag queen story time,
yes,
where men dress up as women with most garish costumes and makeup, which would frighten the living daylights out of me, let alone children.
Me too.
Going into schools and being invited to schools and paid to go into schools, dressed like this, to read certain stories to little children, in order, again, to promote the agenda that it's okay to be what you want to be. At that level, that's what's going on in our country. And in the church, what we've seen in the Church of England recently, there's been the agreement of the bishops that although no new liturgy can be formed, baptism liturgy can be adapted in order to recognize someone's change of sex and transgender. And this can be done publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just relentless. It really is relentless.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I mention the key institutions, certainly in England, to be targeted, being the Church of England and the Roman Catholic Church, is because these are the two traditional church institutions. I mean, you've got a lot of free churches and Methodists and so on, but they're small fry. But certainly the Church of England, because it's linked to the state, and basically having captured, if you like, the BBC.
Yes.
Having more or less captured the government, whether it's Conservative or Labour, it doesn't matter. The views on these things are the same. The third leg of the stool, if you like, of our society is the established church, the Church of England. When that goes, the victory is complete.
Right. How close would you say the Church of England is to succumbing completely? Because I have read so many insane things about the new proposal for this and the new proposal for that. And, you know, I will confess that at a certain point, I just roll my eyes and go, there goes the Church of England again, you know. But there are faithful Christians there, like yourself, like many other Christians, who have to just go bonkers listening to this stuff.
I'd say within 5 years.
5 years. Wow.
Yeah. But looking at the rate of change in the last 10 years, I'd say pretty. You know, I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I'd put my money on this. 5 years will be the acceptance. Although formally it's not the case, there is the acceptance of practicing homosexual clergy, for instance. Transgender will be the next. Next. That exists now. We had last year someone, his name escapes me, but ordained clergy, woman in the Church of England, who was originally a man, and speaking at one of the main churches in town at a lesbian, gay, Christian movement celebration. So that's happening. We already have two bishops in the Church of England, who one homosexual, one gay, one lesbian, both of whom have their partners living with them. But they said, well, it's a celibate relationship. Well, yeah, of course it is. and I said last year the Church of England said, the bishop said, yeah, okay, let's adapt the liturgy on this. And so the erosion, the rot is there. It's a corrupt and corrupting institution, I'm sad to say. So 5 years, when it's full frontal, if you like.
Right. Well, we have the same problem here. I mean, we not only have our mainline denominations that have gone off the rails, that was a long time in coming when they started undermining the authority of the Bible years ago. Mm-hmm. But now in conservative evangelicalism here, I've been reporting a lot in the last several months on this pro-LGBT Christianity conference that was held in one of our most conservative denominations at one of their churches.
Baptist, wasn't it? Yeah.
PCA.
PCA. Sorry.
Yes, Presbyterian Church in America, which broke away from the mainline Presbyterian denomination. Yeah. So we're at the point in the States where it's just everywhere. It's like gas under the door. And sometimes those of us who are trying to be faithful to the Lord just feel like we're throwing our bodies in front of a train. But what else can you do at a time like this?
Exactly. No, you're quite right. And it's so profoundly disappointing. That's what's called in English understatement. It's just horrendous. And when they're your friends, and then when the people who, you know, are genuinely Christian and love the Lord, and yet are profoundly mistaken, profoundly in doing this, whatever the motives, it's suddenly going to end up with suddenly church decline, cultural decline, and the ruination of people's souls, and that's what's at stake.
That's right. Well, and I think many Christians underestimate the degree to which gay activists are working to get into the church.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just a matter of we've woken up and we've realized that we were wrong. It's a matter of nefarious people. I mean, we know this for a fact because we have the Human Rights Campaign here in the United States. They put out handbooks on how evangelicalism can change, and they're working with people within evangelicalism. Yeah. What we really need is not only the courage to speak up against this, Melvin, but it seems to me we need to know our Bibles better. I meet so many Christians who can't even defend the biblical view on homosexuality. They don't know what it is.
No. Well, I entirely agree. And I think, America's a huge place and churches are diverse, but it does seem to me, and I mentioned this in the book, because it applies to England as well, is that there needs to be a literate leadership. And by that, I don't mean that people can just read the lines on a paper, on a page. But basically, they need to know their Bibles.
Yes.
And not simply, the standard text, but know how to read the Bibles responsibly and properly, and how different, basically what the doctrines are and how the different parts relate to each other and so on. But also, the other thing they need is cultural literacy. They must understand the culture in which their people are living and they themselves are living. Otherwise, they become isolationist. They can't relate the Bible at all. It just becomes Well, just a sort of holy huddle.
Yes, that's...
And culture goes its own merry way, and we're left behind.
Oh, I agree with you. Hang on just a moment. We do need to pause for another quick break. Reverend Melvin Tinker with us. That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost is his book, and we'll return right after this on Janet Mefford Today. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and I want to tell you about a 10-year-old Syrian girl named Hanifa. Hanifa lost her mother when she was just 18 months old, and now she lives in a refugee camp in Lebanon. She's smart, she's vivacious, and she's seen more suffering than a child her age should ever see, all because she's a victim of what the UN calls the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II. But because Heart for Lebanon is on the ground in her camp, Hanifa recently placed her faith and trust in Jesus for salvation, and now because her father is illiterate, she's reading the Bible to him every evening. The Lord is using Heart for Lebanon in a powerful way. They're bringing food, survival essentials, and Christian education to girls like Hanifa and their families. And these families are coming to know the Lord. But Heart for Lebanon needs your help to keep helping the desperate. Right now, you can help rescue a family of six in Lebanon with food, Christian education, and survival essentials for just 98 cents a day. That's just $29 a month. All you have to do to help is to call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. The war in Syria is not over. And even if the war stopped today, the UN estimates it will take 50 years to rebuild the country. Jesus said the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. The Lord has sent the workers of Heart for Lebanon into his harvest field, but they need the help of other Christians to keep on doing what they're doing. We need your help. $29 a month will help rescue a family of six. All you have to do is call now, 888-247-5499. That's 888-247-5499. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. These families need your immediate help. Please pick up the phone and call. 888-247-5499. 888-247-5499. Thank you, and God bless. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Thank you for being with us. Reverend Melvin Tinker is here. Always great to talk to you, Melvin. That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost is the name of his new book, The Cancer of Cultural Marxism in the Church, the World, and the Gospel of Change. What you were saying, I think, is so important before we went to that last break, the importance of literate leadership and not just the ability to read, but to know our Bibles and to also know the culture in which we live. Now, there is always that temptation to become a part of the world while you're trying to speak to it. And that is a delicate balance for the Christian. What would you say to pastors who say, I want to understand my culture, but I certainly don't want to be a part of it? How do I avoid crossing that line as I'm trying to bring Jesus Christ to a dying world?
Well, one doesn't have to immerse oneself in culture and all the sort of wallow in the dirt or anything else. We're not talking about that. But there are a number of things necessary. I mean, one needs to read the magazines. One needs to look at, you know, the news websites and actually make a note of what is being said and try and penetrate what's behind it. One needs to be aware of the TV programs. You don't have to watch all of them or anything like that, but at least even if one reads reviews of films or books or TV programs, again, at least you're getting a summary of the worldview and the ideas that are actually being promoted. Right. So the third thing, which is so important, and some pastors I think have lost this, is a personal contact with members of the congregation. That there is what we call walking the factory floor. You actually engage in conversation. You find out what are the problems and the difficulties and the pressures that ordinary Christians are actually having to face today. Because it's so easy to be locked away in your own little study and your own little world, that you actually don't even talk properly to the people in a meaningful way to the people you're actually pastoring. Hmm. And that's a great, basically, let's go back to pastoral visitation.
Good. That's good. That's really good. That's good for everybody. That's good for the church member and for the pastor. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about something else, which I really want to get your thoughts on when you reference C.S. Lewis's resistance thinking and the need to go against the spirit of the age. And that really resonated with me. How would you characterize resistance thinking and what is required of us in that regard?
Okay, well, so the idea of resistance thinking, you know, as you mentioned, came from C.S. Lewis, and it was in an essay he wrote around about the same time as Hideous Strength. But it's this idea of ensuring that we, again, foursquare on the absolute truths of the Christian faith, the non-negotiables. They are non-negotiable. We need to know what those are. And yet we've also got that. So that's the resistance. So if you alter those things, you're going to be countercultural in any age, because this age is against the kingdom of God. I mean, you know, whether it's in, you know, second century Rome or the medieval period, wherever it may be, that's that's the way the world is.
Right.
That's on the one hand. So we've got to be faithful to that. And in that sense, it's like a rock, you know, no matter what crashes against the truth will win out.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there's got to be this element of being able to be relevant, in that is, being able to engage the culture critically, to bring the Christian worldview to bear, to expose the idolatries and the fallacies and the sheer destructive nature of what's actually going on the one hand, but then to present the attractive alternative, which is the Christian faith, in the other. And that's not simply a matter of arguing, but it's actually modeling it within the church, so that the church community should be very different to the surrounding society in which it finds itself. And I would suspect, in the States as well as in England, in some cases there's very little difference between who's in the church and who's out of the church.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly true.
Behavior, you know, in terms of divorce rates, pretty well the same. And interesting, I was looking at a lecture by Peter Kreeft, who's a Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying this about the Roman Catholic Church, that In the United States, the abortion rate in the Roman Catholic Church is the same as in the rest of society.
Hmm.
The view of the gays is the same as society. And that should not be. So
right.
There's no resistance there. It's just simply given in. So that's what it means. So we've got to be clear on what we believe, but we've also got to be able to live it and show the alternative.
That's
when
excellent.
We do that, we will not be loved for it.
No, we won't be loved for it. But, you know, what else can we do at a time like this? When you also mentioned in your book the need for courageous refutation, that was another phrase that really resonated with me, because you said this earlier. There is a great fear that cultural Marxism has ended up bringing upon people, because they know if I'm the one who stands up, I'm the one who is going to get clobbered. But don't people have to be willing to be clobbered in order for the truth to prevail? I mean, this has been required of Christians throughout history. And I just...
Yes.
I lament the fact that we may be a weak, weak church at a time when the world needs a strong church and need the mercy of the Lord right now in ways that I don't think we needed it maybe so much 50 years ago.
I entirely agree. And to some, again, this is, I think, an example of what's happened in the way in which the culture has infiltrated the Christians' attitude and character. I mean, going way back, say to the 1930s. Why was it that one could rally many young men to hit the beach of Iwo Jima,
right,
requiring immense physical courage, but also moral courage?
That's true.
Because they were brought up at a time where they believed in right and wrong, in honor and the well-being, freedom, all these great things which were considered to be so valuable, worth living for and dying for. We're in a situation now, if someone threatens to take away our iPhone, we burst into tears. You know?
Yeah, I do.
There's been a weakening. And I'm not just saying, oh, this is the snowflake generation. I'm not looking at the young people. I'm talking about people my age. I'm in my early 60s now. And we're just scared. And I don't know, in some ways, what are we scared of? Do we believe in eternity? Do we believe in the grace of God? Do we believe that eternal, you know, people's souls are at stake? Mm-hmm. And let me just share something personal, if I may.
Sure.
Just the other week, I had my youngest son, and he had his family with him, which is two young daughters, one 7 months old and one 3 years old.
Uh-uh.
And they were in our church, and they were right there in front of me. And as we were singing a lovely great hymn, I can't remember what it was, but it was a great hymn, we were praising God, and I looked at my two grandchildren, and in my heart I made a vow. I said, Lord, by the strength that you give me, I will make a stand on these things because I love them. I don't want to see them ending up in a Christless eternity because they have gone along with the world and they've ended up acting immorally or whatever it is. I love them too much. And when you bring it down to that kind of level of personal, we're not talking about my personal comfort. I'm talking about the well-being of my grandchildren and the rest of my congregation and other people.
Yep.
And I just pray for God's grace to enable me to stand whatever the storms, and there are going to be some big storms coming up in the future, I think.
That really resonates with me. I think the same thing about my children and my future grandchildren. And I think what kind of world, you know, I can do so little, really. I'm one person. I can only do so much, but I can pray and I can do what I can do with the gifts and talents God has given me to stand for Jesus Christ in this world and try to train them to do the same thing as my husband and I are raising them. But you're right to think also for the future generations that are to come. It's really daunting, I think, to consider not only the extent to which cultural Marxism has penetrated us and weakened us, but it's also encouraging to read your book and to remind ourselves Jesus is still Lord.
That's right.
And the cultural Marxists can't do a thing about that. We just
absolutely
need to rediscover
right.
that, right? And proclaim Christ the way we're supposed to.
Yes. And that's the glorious truth.
It is a glorious truth. Well, we have to leave it there, but a wonderful book, That Hideous Strength, How the West Was Lost by the Reverend Melvin Tinker. All your books are great, Melvin, and it's always a privilege to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Janet. You're most kind. Thank you.
Oh, God bless you.
We too
appreciate you very, very much. Thank you for listening to Janet Mefford today. Always a delight to have you with us. God bless. We'll see you next time.